It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Jerry Willis.
I'm Steve Ducey.
I'm Shannon Bream, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, November 28th, 2022, I'm Mike Emanuel. Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler knows about hard-fought runoff races in Georgia after losing a close race to Democrat Raphael Warnock in January 2021. Now Loeffler is trying to help the Republican candidate taking on Warnock, Herschel Walker, in a race that has become very nasty and extremely expensive.
And Warnock himself came out and said that he would be the 51st vote and potentially able to do things like abolish the legislative filibuster.
I'm Lisa Brady. These are lean times for many families, and groups that help meet the need are stretching their budgets too.
Many of our food banks across the country are telling us that they are serving more people now than they did during the most difficult times of the pandemic.
And I'm Jimmy Failla. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
It all comes down to Georgia. Early voting is underway in the critical Senate runoff race, and both sides have about a week left to make their case to Georgia voters. The Reverend Raphael Warnock is the incumbent Democrat senator.
This race is about competence and character. And the differences could not be more stark.
This race between Warnock and Republican football legend Herschel Walker has gotten nasty and extremely expensive. With a win by Democrat Warnock, that would give Majority Leader Chuck Schumer a little more cushion with a 51st Democrat. While Warnock welcomes strong financial support from his party, he has been evasive about whether he'd welcome President Biden on the campaign trail.
Would you welcome President Biden down, or are there any plans for him to join you on the campaign trail?
President Obama's retired. I don't control the schedule of the President of the United States. But we've got a little over 2 weeks, and we'll see who shows up.
Republican Governor Brian Kemp was reelected in Georgia, avoiding a runoff with a strong victory over Democrat Stacey Abrams. Now Kemp is trying to tap into his own popularity to help Walker cross the finish line.
Don't believe the political pundits that are saying, oh, this race doesn't matter anymore. It matters. There's only very few United States senators, 100 of them, and they have a lot of authority and a lot of control.
Of course, Senate runoffs are not new in Georgia. The 2020 Senate runoffs in Georgia gave Democrats the majority. That year, Warnock defeated Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler, who had served in office for a year after being appointed to the seat.
Here on the ground in Georgia, people are lining up. They're getting out for early voting. And hopefully everyone's becoming aware of what's at stake here in Georgia. It's not just things happening in Washington. It's going to directly affect Georgians' representation in Washington.
Senator Kelly Loeffler started a conservative voter registration and mobilization group called Greater Georgia.
And I can just tell you firsthand from having gone through the 2020 Senate runoff that is the nature of runoffs. And what's so important to overwhelm kind of the bitterness and the attack ads that we're all fed up with here in Georgia is the fact that, you know, people's way of life is really at stake here. In the Senate. And a lot of the media is out saying that, you know, this race doesn't matter, the control of the Senate's decided, but it's not. And it's so important that people understand what is at stake here. And I'm encouraged to see strong participation already.
You mentioned the attack ads and that sort of thing. And obviously, this is the second cycle in a row where Georgia's had runoffs. Do you worry about voter fatigue? People have had enough of politics.
Well, of course, certainly that was at issue in 2020, which certainly in a presidential year, it's a very different feel in an election year. But it makes a midterm election no less important So I think voters understand. And look, this all comes down to not only the candidates, but what the candidates represent. And, you know, in Raphael Warnock, we now have 2 years of his voting record. So I think Georgians have had a chance to see that he's going to go to Washington and do something different than what he says in his slick campaign ads. He truly votes like the fact that he is Stacey Abrams' handpicked Senate candidate, and he has represented the votes of the most progressive wing. He's a rubber stamp for Biden. And I think voters are energized by understanding that this country is heading in the wrong direction. This is our last chance. And here in Georgia, we have a bit of a do-over to make sure that the next 6 years, Georgians have representation that reflects our values and not California or New York's values.
Have you had a chance recently to visit with Herschel and or his team and offered some advice as they go through this runoff time period?
Well, sure. I certainly have offered my support and encouragement. I was out with Herschel campaigning. We were on the stump together last week and had great turnout. Hundreds of folks turned out, even though it was, you know, Thanksgiving week. Mm-hmm. We were out with Tulsi Gabbard and Ronna McDaniel. You know, just encouraging voters. This is about the voice of the people, and Herschel knows that. I think what's important is that, you know, people like me and anyone else who wants to come to Georgia and talk about what's at stake is important, because the mainstream media here is really participating in the left's attacks on Herschel and, you know, really elevating that narrative and, you know, really helping Warnock. This week, I've got Senator-elect Katie Britt coming in as part of my co-chairing of Women for Herschel. Mm-hmm. And I'm also heading up some of the fundraising here in Georgia for the efforts going on to make sure that he has the funds we need, because what's happened is Democrats have shown that this is a must-win election. They've poured tens of millions of dollars in a very short amount of time here in this runoff. And really, if you look at the money that got spent in Georgia, Herschel got outspent by about $70 million.
Wow.
Okay. And he only got beat by 35,000 votes. And in a state where we had 4 million people turn out to vote, that's less than 1%. And so Herschel is a really strong candidate. It's just a matter of not having, you know, this red state get flooded by blue state money and, you know, enabling Georgia voters to decide.
You mentioned money and the money pouring into Georgia. Is it shocking to you just how much money is being spent on this one Senate race?
Well, it's so important. And having been through it in 2020, it's not shocking. I hate to see this amount of money get normalized in terms of spending in politics, but it's vitally important that Herschel gets his message out. That's why I'm helping lead the fundraising here in Georgia and have been supportive myself of that effort. But, you know, I think what Georgians need to understand is it's not just about the ads, the slick Hollywood ads that, you know, with Warnock's outsized funding, he's able to afford that and really layer on the attacks. But what's exciting to me is that Governor Kemp has cut an ad for Herschel, and it actually nails perfectly the issue at stake here, which is Warnock's going to go to Washington and be a rubber stamp for Joe Biden. And Warnock himself came out and said that he would be the 51st vote and potentially able to do things like abolish the legislative filibuster and what he calls restore voting rights, which in his vernacular means eliminating things like voter ID, legalizing ballot harvesting, and many other things that would put our elections many steps back, particularly to where they've gotten in Georgia, where we had record turnout after Senate Bill 202, the Election Integrity Act. It was easy to vote and hard to cheat. Our elections, our outcomes were known well in under 24 hours. And you look at other states like Nevada, where they had less than a million voters, but, you know, 5 days later, they're still trying to count their votes. So these are the kind of radical ideas that Warnock has about legislating as the 51st vote. So this is what's so important about getting Herschel's message out.
The attacks back and forth have been pretty brutal. Obviously, the left's been bringing out these women about Herschel Walker. And then on the other side, there have been attacks against Warnock being potentially a negligent father, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution calling that crossing a line. Your thoughts on kind of the nastiness with the stakes so high?
Well, obviously, you know, the idea that Warnock has some kind of moral superiority over Herschel is just not true. You've seen exactly who Raphael Warnock is in his own words. He's called police officers gangsters and thugs. He said you can't serve God in the military. He was arrested for obstructing an investigation into child abuse, and he has allegedly tried to run over his wife's foot with his Tesla. So there's no moral superiority there, and I think Georgians are tired of the whole holier-than-thou Reverend Senator Act. And I think what Georgians want is someone who respects their challenges, who says, well, why is Warnock voting for more spending? He would have voted for $6 trillion in Biden's Build Back Better that fortunately Joe Manchin stood against. But Joe Manchin's kind of moderating force on the Democrat side will be totally eliminated if Warnock wins, and on and on. So, you know, there's a lot at stake here at home, but also in the Senate, you know, the power sharing structure. So I think, you know, where the committees are evenly split and
right,
the money is evenly split. And so we have to get out of these soap opera dramas back and forth, because what is at stake here is us being able to send a political outsider, a successful entrepreneur, someone who cares about Georgians and will vote for Georgians in Washington.
It seems like the trend these days is that Democrats do some of the early voting, whereas a lot of Republicans show up on actual election day. The Secretary of State's office reported that at least 70,000 people voted Saturday. So does that mean the get out the effort on actual runoff day, December 6th, becomes that much more critical?
We're seeing this trend toward early in-person voting grow. Mm-hmm. And so about two-thirds of votes cast in the general election were early in person. And I think that's really important, because 20% of people who intend to vote on election day end up getting pulled in a different direction and not able to actually vote. So my organization, Greater Georgia, has been out there working with groups that maybe campaigns aren't able to reach. In particular, the disenfranchised voters, the 339,000 voters, conservatives that stayed home in January of 2021, we're getting them back to the polls. In fact, we got roughly 42% of them back in the general in November, and we're out there working to bring 100, 200,000 of them back to the polls in December, hopefully in early voting. So we're helping with that effort. And I would just encourage everyone, because early voting starts today, Monday, in Georgia, that we have to make sure people are getting out before Election Day, because that's what Democrats do. They bank the votes and they win before Election Day even gets here.
Finally, I'm curious your personal reflections as someone who served in the United States Senate. As some time has gone by, how do you view your experience on Capitol Hill?
Well, certainly it was the honor of my lifetime. I loved working for Georgians. I loved doing the constituent casework at home, working for veterans, for their families. I loved the work I did in Washington, serving on the Senate Ag Committee. But the thing I loved most was being a voice for Georgians in Washington. I was blessed to live the American dream and to be able to fight for it and for American values, to stand up for conservative values. It's just something that means so much to me, and it's why I've continued my work here in Georgia to continue to grow the conservative movement.
Senator Kelly Loeffler of the great state of Georgia, thank you so much for your time. A pleasure speaking with you, and we'll keep following the race.
Thanks so much, Mike. Great to be with you.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
This is Jimmy Failla with your Fox News commentary coming up.
The hustle and bustle of the holiday season is upon us, feeling more like before the pandemic in many places. But times are tough for a lot of families, with inflation still running near 40-year highs.
Look, I got four kids, and it is hard. It's hard.
She was among hundreds who waited in line in the cold recently for an annual turkey giveaway in New York City.
This is a blessing.
The kind of effort to help those in need that happens nationwide, year-round, because the need is that great. Last year, more than 53 million people sought help to put food on the table. The U.S. Agriculture Department says 34 million people are considered food insecure, including 9 million children. And there's one nonprofit that has food banks in every county in the U.S.
You know, the Feeding America network of food banks and their 60,000 community-based partners all across the country, you know, obviously are meeting the needs of their hungry neighbors day in and day out.
Katie Fitzgerald is president and chief operating officer of Feeding America.
But at the holidays, it's really a time when we all want to help make sure that every family, every senior, every person who's struggling to make ends meet can also have a holiday meal. And right now, that's really tough because of the high price of food, in addition to the pressures that are on our system generally because of the high prices of food.
I want to talk more about those high prices in a moment, but I wanted to take us back first to the first year of the pandemic, because we all heard about more people starting to turn to food banks and other programs for help, in some cases people who had never needed help before. 3 years in, where do we stand in terms of the need?
You know, Lisa, I wish I could tell you that it is improved, but what we're really struck and in some ways shocked to see is that many of our food banks across the country are telling us that they are serving more people now than they did during the most difficult times of the pandemic. And it is really because of the high cost of food and how that is compromising people's budgets. And they're seeing so many people who are working, who even like during the pandemic, when the economy was sort of shuttered in some ways and folks had no choice, had never gone to a food bank before, are now turning to them. They're seeing that happen again. I just talked to a food bank here in Minnesota where I'm visiting in Rochester, and their numbers are up over 30% from last year. And it's higher than it was during the pandemic.
Wow. Wow. And I mean, inflation also impacts your budget, right? I mean, the food that you're supplying doesn't come for free. So what are you doing to be able to cope with that at Feeding America?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. Our food banks and the Feeding America National Office, we're having to spend a lot more money to purchase food. So obviously, I hope folks know our core of our model is to procure donated food from manufacturers, from retailers, from distribution centers, from America's farmers, who are also generous in sharing with us and donating food into the charitable food system. But frankly, the demand is just too high. And we're not able to meet that demand with donated food alone. So we are purchasing, and we know 70% of our food banks in the network will spend more this year than they did last year on food. And we also know that over 40% of the Feeding America food banks are going to be operating a deficit budget, which means their local boards of directors are dipping into their reserves and spending their rainy day funds down to really just make sure they can feed people who are showing up at food pantries in their communities right now.
Do you do some of the same things that households do when they're trying to stretch dollars, buying store brands, for instance, or, you know, shopping differently or shopping at different places?
I would say what we see many of our food banks doing is having to swap out products that they just can't really afford. And sadly, you know, one of the things that we really always like to do is make sure that we're providing turkeys and some basic staples for holiday meals to people who are experiencing food insecurity. What we're hearing from some of our food banks is because of the price of turkeys and other things, that there's just limits to what they can do. And they're swapping out other less expensive, although still higher priced proteins. So instead of turkeys, maybe they're providing some beef or pork, which is also great protein, but not exactly what people want to eat on Thanksgiving Day. So we are seeing that kind of swapping occur in terms of the choices that food banks are making with their purchasing dollars.
What about people who want to donate? I mean, obviously, you never tell people to donate the fresh items because they don't, you know, last as long, right, in terms of freshness. So people aren't donating, you know, fruits, vegetables, and meats. What should people be donating to their local food bank? Are there certain items that are always more in need than other items?
Yeah, I mean, right now, what we do ask our very generous donors all over the country, people who donate to their local food banks or to Feeding America, is the best thing folks can do, frankly, right now is give a financial gift. Food banks purchase food in bulk. And so you and I could go into the grocery store and buy, you know, 6 cans of green beans, and we're going to pay the retail price for that. A food bank can order a truckload of green beans and really get a great deal on those green beans. And so we do ask folks to consider whether they would be willing to make a financial donation to feedingamerica.org or to their local food bank, because the food banks can really make those dollars stretch even further. And then, of course, you know, just so folks know, we work really hard to procure a lot of fresh food into our system. So certainly individuals can donate canned food, peanut butter, any kind of vegetables. Or canned vegetables are really great right now because fruit and veggies are also really high priced right now. So those kinds of things are very helpful. And we're working really hard to bring in truckloads of fresh produce, protein, and dairy into our food banks as well.
Are you guys still seeing any impacts of supply chain shortages, or has that eased? Are you able to find the things that you want to find?
Yeah, I think for the most part, we're able to find the things that we want to find in terms of the supply chain, not a lot of shortages. The challenge is really, again, the price of that product. And so from a supply chain perspective, we're still having to make trade-offs, right, to be able to make our dollar go as far as it can. And so to the extent to which we're having to change products, that's where we start to get into more complicated sourcing, because we may want one thing, we can't afford it, so we have to go find a different product that we think is going to be acceptable and something that people want to eat, right? So for the most part, the supply chain is working all right. It's just too expensive.
Do the holidays tend to be the most popular time for donating, but also the time of greatest need? Because I'm wondering how that all affects, you know, what you have to do for the rest of the year. It's not like there's only need around the holidays.
Right. So I would say that the need is pretty stable, and it has more to do with the economic trade-offs that families have to make. So, you know, the winter time is tough in northern climates. People's utility bills go up. So that's where we see those kinds of pressures on the household budget, that, you know, people cut their food budget because they may not be able to not pay their electric bill. They need their car to go to work. They're going to keep paying their rent or their mortgage payment, but they're going to cut their food budget. And that's where we really see that need ebb and flow. I would say for us, this is a great time for people to give if they can, because these are the months of the year where food banks, local food banks, raise their most funds that help them provide support, food, and resources to families throughout the entire year.
There had been, if memory serves, a decline in donations, or at least a struggle during the height of the pandemic, because so many people were out of work and under lockdown and this kind of thing. Has there been a rebound, or has inflation kind of taken away any potential rebound in donations?
Yeah, that is true. And the Feeding America network of food banks and Feeding America enjoyed really wonderful support from people who could give financially during the pandemic to help make sure that we could continue to feed folks. What we also experienced was more government support at that time. There were a lot of relief programs in place to help American families during the economic shutdowns of the pandemic, and those are going away. And so Now with the inflated prices and high food prices, we're seeing donations continue, but not at that level. And with the absence of some of those government support programs, that's where we're really getting into a bind, where we're not having enough food or donations to really close that gap. So we're not really seeing a decline in donations, but this is the time where we'd really like to encourage people to give, because this is the time that helps us make sure that we can provide resources all year long.
One more time, what's the best way for people to donate, or where, I should say?
Yeah, so the best way for folks to donate is to go to feedingamerica.org, and at our website, you can find your local food bank that is a Feeding America partner food bank, and donate directly to them. Click on their website, or you can donate to feedingamerica.org, and we take those dollars and make sure that they get spread across the country. So you can go to that one site and find your local place to donate, or donate to the national effort. Either way, folks are going to help make sure their neighbors have the food they need to thrive.
Katie Fitzgerald, President and COO of Feeding America, thanks for all that you and your group do, and thank you for spending some time with us.
You bet. Thank you so much, Lisa, for having us. We really appreciate the help.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday.
Americans will be going online for holiday shopping deals as retailers take part in Cyber Monday. Many stores began offering Cyber Monday deals early this year in hopes of capturing a bigger market share of holiday sales.
Wednesday.
Thousands will gather near Times Square, and millions of television viewers will see the lighting of the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree. The 82-foot-tall Norway spruce is adorned with more than 50,000 multicolored LED lights and a Swarovski star. Wednesday also marks the official end of the 2022 Atlantic hurricane season.
Thursday.
President Biden will host French President Emmanuel Macron at the White House for a state visit. The two are expected to discuss a number of global issues, including the war in Ukraine.
Friday.
Northrop Grumman is set to reveal the Air Force B-21 Raider aircraft, the country's newest strategic bomber. The B-21 is expected to take the skies early next year, intended to replace the B-2 Spirit and the B-1 Lancer. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Jimmy Fallon.
What's on your mind?
So Cyber Monday is here, and if you're not familiar, it's basically Black Friday for people who don't have the hand speed to punch their way out of the store. Seriously, they should probably call it Black and Blue Friday at this point, given all the retail rumbles we've seen over the years. Spain has the running of the bulls, America has the running of the flat screens. As for today, the only thing taking a beating is your credit card, because all the deals are online. Now I know some people don't shop over the internet because you don't think it's safe, but come on, man, I'm not worried. The last time my identity got stolen, my credit score actually went up 12 points. And truth be told, online shopping's never been safer. So for my money, today is a home run. Not only does it get all your shopping done early, but it gives Americans more time to do what we do best over the holidays, which is to eat and drink like we're heading to a firing squad. Which is why if you are going to take advantage of the early shopping window, make sure you buy some new clothes for yourself, because none of the old ones are going to fit by the end of the month. Happy holidays. I'll see you at the gym. Jim's Bar and Grill. Be sure to listen to Fox Across America with me, Jimmy Failla, weekdays from noon to 3 on the Fox News app and foxacrossamerica.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.